Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring John Tavener, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing the San Juan River. The show will be 90 minutes in length, broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible tonight. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with John Tavener about fly fishing the San Juan River. Get ready to visit the International Sportsman's Exposition nearest you in Phoenix, May 7th through 9th, and Salt Lake City, March 13th through 16th. Each ISE show spotlights 400 to 600-plus exhibitors, including fly shops and hundreds of lodges, guides, and outfitters from across the West, Canada, Alaska, and even South America. Watch ISE's Best of the West Distance Casting Contest. Learn from the best local fly tiers at our How-To Center and Fly Tying Video Theater. Meet fly fishing's legends, Next Generation Stars, at ISE's Fishing Theater. Clouser, Dennis, Rickards, Blanton, O'Keefe, Gunn, Patine, Dorsey, dozens more. Watch film premieres of Soulfish by Mikey Weir and Equilibrium by Dr. Grant Wiswell. Schedules and info online right now at sportsexpos.com. That's sportsexpos.com. Before we introduce John, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which you can learn more about at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's flyfusionmag.com. And then we'll also be giving away Chad Shields' Bass Streamer Pro Fly Box, which includes 4 Mud Dog Salamanders, 4 Shields Shiners, 2 Deep Swimming Frogs, 2 Sugar Daddy Craws, and 2 Producers. All are great for largemouth and smallmouth bass. You can see his patterns at www.emergefishing.com. That's www.emergefishing.com. So that's 14 flies in all in that box, so that'll be a great prize tonight. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Look for the link under John's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate, compliments of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. Their website is www.frontrangeanglers.com. And here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question's going to be about something John and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage, the same place where you can ask questions. So listen closely at the end of the show, use your best typing skills, and first person that provides the correct answer will win the prize. Our guest tonight is John Tavener. John is a professional guide, fly designer, author, and lecturer, and has been fly fishing and fly tying for over 30 years. He grew up in Lakeview, Oregon, where he began fly fishing at the age of 11, chasing rainbows and cutthroats. John sold his first flies to his neighbors before he was in high school. He then moved to New Mexico in 1983. John began his guiding career as a ski instructor and whitewater rafting guide, which he continued for 8 years. He began guiding fly fishers with the Los Rios Anglers in Taos, New Mexico in 1985. He guided on the Rio Grande, the Cimarron, Costilla Creek, and numerous private ranches, including the Forbes Trinchera Ranch in Colorado. He first fished the San Juan River in 1985 and fell in love with it. He guided his first trip on the San Juan in 1987 and moved to Aztec in 1991 and began guiding full-time on the San Juan for Rizzuto's Fly Shop. He then became head guide of Soaring Eagle Lodge in 1996. He and his wife Monica started Sandstone Anglers in 1999, and the Aztec Chamber of Commerce subsequently named Sandstone Anglers New Business of the Year. John is a featured tire with the Pacific Fly Group and has developed many fly patterns now popular with experienced San Juan fishermen. He wrote the section on the San Juan River for the book A Fly Fisher's Guide to New Mexico by Van Beecham. John has also appeared in Walmart's Great Outdoors with Jack Youngblood and Fly Fish TV with Terry Gunn. Well, John, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Roger.
With John tonight, we're going to talk about the San Juan River in New Mexico. And John's going to introduce us to the river, tell us about the fish, the food, the flies, the techniques that are used there, and basically give us a wonderful tour of that river. So, John, I'm looking forward to this. We've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we sure do, Roger, and I'm really looking forward to letting everybody have a good inside feel of the San Juan. If they haven't been here before, I know a lot of anglers have been here before.
Well, I think we've got a little of both on the call tonight, as we usually do. We've got probably some pretty experts, fly fishers, that have fished down there quite a bit, and some that have never been and would like to go. So we'll have to cover both sides of it for them and give them the best picture we can. And you got to give away a few secrets to those old pros that come down there, John. So
I'm glad to.
All right. Okay, well, let's just start a little bit about the San Juan River. Some people don't, like we said, don't know of it or how it's configured and so forth. First of all, tell us whereabouts it is in the United States.
The San Juan is in the northwest corner of New Mexico, near what's known as the Four Corners, where the four states meet.
Okay.
The San Juan originates in southwestern Colorado, up in the Wolf Creek Pass area. Below Navajo Dam, there's approximately about 15 miles of river you can fish. The upper stretches, the quality waters, as it's known, will hold anywhere from 10 to 15,000 fish per mile.
That's a lot of fish.
Yes.
Now, you said Navajo Dam, so we've got a tailwater fishery here, right?
Yes, it is. It was created in 1962. By 1966, had trophy trout in it. And to this day, it's still probably one of the best-known rivers in the United States.
Yeah, I've been down there several times, and every time I've enjoyed it, that's for sure. Now, what was there before the dam? The dam really created kind of a recreational area there, didn't it?
Yes, there was a lot of fishing that took place on the river prior to the dam, but it was for catfish primarily. You had to go up into Colorado before you actually found trout. Once they started construction on the dam, the New Mexico Game and Fish knew they were going to have a cold water fishery. So they went through and poisoned all the fish out of the river in that section, and as soon as the dam was completed, they stocked it with trout. So by 1962, they had trout in the river, and by 1966, they had trophy trout in the river.
That's great. That water does come out of there cold, doesn't it?
The reservoir is close to 300 feet deep, and they take the water out at about 250 feet. So the temperature of the water is 42 degrees year-round. So it's the same in January as it is in July, as I like to say.
So it's just the air temperature that makes a difference, and that can be a big difference in New Mexico, right?
Yeah, you in the summertime here, we will primarily be in the 90s. We might get a day or two that's in the 100s, but it's primarily in the 90s, and in the winter, we're pretty temperate, I would say. We're not really cold. We don't get a lot of below zero temperatures, if any. In fact, I've only seen maybe one or two days where it was didn't get above freezing. So
okay.
It's pretty
okay.
Mild climate.
All right. Now, and then we're going to talk about the tailwater fishery and below tonight, but just give... if people are coming to the area, just let them know what's possible up there in Navajo Lake as well.
Navajo is a pretty fantastic fishery. If you ever get a chance to fish it, there's not a lot of guides operating on the river, on the reservoir, but if you have a boat, it's the best smallmouth bass lake in the state of New Mexico. The state record is from that lake. The lake record for largemouth is 14 pounds, and it also is a fantastic northern pike fishery. And they catch 20-plus pound pike out of there all the time. So, and not to mention, it has some trout. Has
stripers,
some,
too, doesn't it?
No stripers.
No stripers? Okay.
But it has, like, everything else. I mean, perch, crappie, largemouth, smallmouth, couple species of trout. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So a person could look at going after a lot of different fish if you want to stay in the area for a while. Of course,
oh yeah,
it's awful hard to leave that tailwater once you get down there. So.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's pretty amazing
fish,
river.
Yeah, with the fish you've got there. Well, we've got several questions here from Jack Rovers in New England, Steve Cullen in Chicago, Mondi in Los Gatos, California, Fred in Arizona, and all the questions are pretty much the same. When's the best time of year to fish the San Juan?
Well, again, because it is a tailwater and because it does have very consistent temperatures, the San Juan fishes very well every month of the year. Conditions can be different. Now, we do get something that happens every year, which is the lake turning over. I know some tailwaters that's not an issue, but on ours it is. And so basically from about the middle of December through a lot of the spring, the water isn't as clear as it is basically after they have their high spring releases, which can vary from year to year, but it's typically May and June. Usually as the water goes down in June, the water becomes gin clear, and it will stay very clear through the fall and into early December until that happens again. So conditions vary, and we're pretty lucky that we can fish 12 months out of the year here, of course, just because of the weather. If I were going to actually say 2 months of the year that maybe were the best, I would have to pick November as being one of my favorites, and the time frame, let's say, from mid-June through mid-July.
Now, of course, that's going to be your busiest season, too, I suppose.
November isn't typically one of our busiest months, so that's not necessary. But
June, July
time, yeah, that can be pretty busy. Yep. It'll stay pretty consistent. Surprisingly enough, I would have to say our busiest season is the fall. People love the weather here, you know,
yeah,
in the fall.
Yeah. It cools down a bit, gets real nice, yeah.
Yeah, and I would say September and October are actually two of our most popular months on the river. And you can't blame them because they're fantastic.
Can we back up a little bit? Could you explain when you said that the lake turns over and explain what that means?
What happens, it usually takes until about the middle of December for it to get cold enough, but the surface water on the reservoir finally gets cold enough that it actually sinks. And as it sinks to the bottom, when it hits the bottom of the reservoir, it stirs up that silty bottom of the reservoir where all the sediments have deposited. So it gets dirty. It literally, you'll see a change if you were to look at the reservoir from the top of the dam where you could see the reservoir and see the river almost at the same time. You can see that the river will kind of take on the same color as the reservoir.
Yeah, is that a healthy thing for a lake to do? I mean, is that something
I don't think it's an uncommon thing. I've talked to people, it just depends on the climate, you know. I understand that some of the Midwest and Eastern lakes will do something like that because it does get cold enough. And we're at a high enough elevation that it does get cold enough that it does that.
Okay.
And I think it probably makes a difference that we do have a lot of sediment in our soils up here. It's a very, you know, the canyon that the San Juan is situated in is a sandstone canyon, and we have a lot of sand in our soil, and it just does not hold a lot of water, so it does wash a lot of sediments in anytime you have snow and rain and things like that.
Sure. Now, we do have a couple of more specific questions about time of year. We've got Ken in Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada. He said that he's going to be taking a trip to New Mexico between February and April of next year, and while this is not a fishing trip necessarily for him, he wouldn't mind taking along his gear. And he's wondering if it would be worth his while to do that for a day or two during that time period.
Absolutely. Okay. That's a great time of year to fish the river here. It's certainly not going to be 20 or 30 below, like Ken mentions here in his question, but like he's experiencing. And like I said, at that time of year, the water isn't going to be gin clear. So the sight fishing, which is really an excellent attribute to our river, isn't as good, of course, at that time of year just because you can't see the fish. But I can tell you this, fly selection becomes very simple at that time of year. There's a lot of spawning fish, so an egg pattern works extremely well. And for whatever reason, the red and orange larvas are very prolific at that time of year. That's something that we're seeing on the river right now. And you combine those two flies and you can catch fish on our river all the time.
One of the questions just came in on the internet from Charlie in Mesa, Arizona. He says, with the wet winter and lots of snow, how will the water levels impact the fishing? Can you talk about the improvements to the San Juan? Now, the water levels there are pretty much controlled by the dam, right?
Right, but we're experiencing a very wet winter, and our snow levels in the mountains are at or above 150%. And they've managed to get the reservoir full, and they've kept it pretty full, and they've even given us higher flows all of last season, basically. They still needed to release a large portion of water, and they actually started in February, bumping the river up to 3,000 CFS. And our normal flow is between 500 and 750 CFS. So we're right now experiencing some pretty high water. Still very good fishing. It's maybe a little more challenging to wade at those flows. You kind of pretty much are staying close to the bank unless you know you're in some shallow areas. There's an area above a big run called the Texas Hole where you have a large amount of braided channels that are excellent at this flow. There's also some back channels that are very wadeable at this flow that are below the Texas Hole that can provide some pretty good fishing at these flows. So it does kind of open up a few things and puts a few fish in closer to the bank and into some of these back channels and side channels that the wade fishermen can still access. It's not easy going. I would be very cautious. I would, you know, probably recommend using a wading staff at these flows, maybe even a flotation device. If you have any kind of issue about standing in pretty fast water, then probably maybe not the flow that you want to go fish at.
Yeah. We have Brian Whiting. Brian was on our show, actually, in Glenwood Springs, mm-hmm. Colorado, and he's considering coming down there at the end of March. And he was asking about the 3,000 CFS flows that are going there. He wanted to know if it created new channels and braids, which ordinarily aren't present, and be fun to explore. Does that give you some, I think you just said,
yeah,
it brings
exactly.
some fish in closer, right?
Exactly. Some of those back channels and side channels that I mentioned aren't really prevalent at some of the lower flows. You may not have much more than a trickle running through it, you know, so it probably doesn't have any fish in it. When you get these higher flows, there'll be fish that'll move into those spots, especially since it's spring and the fish are starting to spawn. So there's a lot of fish moving around into those kind of areas looking for spawning beds.
Okay. Well, John, we have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with John about fly fishing tactics for trout on the San Juan. Flats Time Charters is your sponsor for this segment of the show. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as a seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with John Davenher about fly fishing the San Juan River. If you'd like to ask John a question, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and enter your question in the text box there, and we'll receive your question immediately. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. John, one of the questions came in. I don't know if you can answer this or not. Tim in Perry, Utah wants to know what the lake and the dam, what the longitude and the latitude are. Do you happen to know that?
I don't happen to know that.
Okay.
I do not.
Probably if you would go on to Google Maps and put in Aztec, New Mexico, that would probably get you the closest, and then you could probably find it from there, I would suspect, if you're really trying.
Or Navajo Dam.
Or Navajo Dam. Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Google Maps will do that or not. But anyway, sorry about that, Tim. You'll have to do a little research on your own there. Another question about flows. Nick in Santa Fe. I know the river is flowing at 3,000 CFS now. At high flows, where do you fish? I think we kind of answered that question. Is 3,000 the highest it'll flow, or will they go higher with that?
No, it will go to 5,000 CFS at some time, probably sometime either in April or May. And they try not to keep it at above, at that 5,000 CFS for more than about 30 days. That's really, according to the Bureau of Reclamation, that's about the max they want to put the dam through. Although this year, again, we're very wet this year, so anything's possible. That could go a little bit longer, but they usually 30 days at 5,000 CFS, and then they'll gradually decrease it, and it will go back to somewhere between, well, last year they dropped it down to about 1,200 CFS and held it for a while. So it's a little unpredictable. 500 to 750 is kind of the normal flow, though.
Okay. Now, what kind of fish can you expect to catch there, and what are the most common in the tailwater there?
Well, it's one of the best rainbow trout fisheries in the nation, of course. That's the primary fish. They far outnumber the brown trout, although the browns during the drought years really came on strong when the rainbows were kind of struggling through the drought years, which were in the early 2000s here, like 2001, 2002, 2003. That's when the browns really took a stronghold in the river. Now, there are sections of the river that probably have 30 to 40% brown trout.
Okay. Do they end up being about the same size?
Definitely the rainbows get much larger than the browns on our river, especially in the special trout water in the upper 4 miles of river. There's just not a lot of forage fish for browns to get big on. They pretty much have to be a bug eater like the rainbows are. And the rainbows tend to be a better stationary bug-eating fish. And you'll see the rainbows have a lot bigger bellies and be a lot stouter fish than the browns. Although the browns give a good account of themselves when they fight, but they just don't get as big as the rainbows do.
What's the average size range in the river right now? What's your average fish? What's a good fish?
Average fish on our river is anywhere from 15 to 18 inches is an average fish. A good number of fish in the, 18 to 21 inch class. There's a good number of those size fish. Above that, not as many as there probably has been in the past, but it's still pretty healthy. I saw probably the largest fish I've ever seen on the San Juan this year, and it was at least a 30-inch fish. So our river still produces some pretty giant rainbows, I'll tell you that much.
Okay. Can you give us kind of from a bird's-eye view, kind of the configuration of the river, and then I'd like to talk to you more in detail about certain areas of the river, but kind of give us the layout of the fishable water and how many miles of fishable water is there?
There's actually about 15 miles of fishable water, although the last 8 miles of that is through private land and really can only be floated unless you have permission or pay access to fish that area. In the upper 4 miles, which is known as the special trout water or the quality water stretch, when you start out near the dam, you go through a lot of series of riffles with long pools. And that's kind of the characteristic of our river. We have a lot of slow-moving water, and more like a Spring Creek-type feel to it. You'll have some riffles, but because of the coldness of our water, it really promotes midges. So you actually get a lot of fish in that kind of slow-moving water. Once you get about a quarter mile below the dam, you'll get to a run called the Cable Hole, which is a big, long, deep run. And the tail out of that is an area called the Upper Flats, which is a big, long, calm pool. You'll then get into some braided channels that will last for at least a quarter of a mile. At normal flows, don't have a lot of water in it, but hold an incredible amount of fish. Where they all meet, they form an area called the Texas Hole.
Okay, up until this point, this is all wade-only water, correct?
Pretty much exactly. So that's about the first mile of river is wade access only.
Okay. And then you're at Texas Hole.
The Texas Hole is nearly a half a mile long and probably holds 10,000 fish in itself. It's an unbelievable pool. You can launch a boat there and have several different takeouts, anywhere from a 3-mile float to a 12-mile float. Oh, excuse me, actually a 14-mile float. Most people just do the upper 3 miles through the special trout water. Once you leave the Texas Hole, you actually have some channels that branch off on the south side of the river, and the main channel goes down the north side and comes to a big run called Three Island Run. And Three Island Run is one of my favorites on the river. Probably have landed more big fish out of that particular pool than any of the pools in the quality water stretch. Where those channels come back together, they form an area called the Lower Flats, which is a large, broad, shallow riffle area that's very popular with the waders. It narrows up and forms a channel called Lunker Alley, and then makes a sharp S-turn, which is known as Betis Bend, and then a long, calm, deep pool known as Death Row. Because if you ever had to row a boat through it in 30-mile-an-hour winds, you thought you were going to die.
Been there.
if you've rowed a boat, you probably have. And then continuing on, once you've gone through Death Row, you get to an area called the Cannon Run and a beautiful rock formation there called E.T. Rock. Very unique rock formation in the water. And then below that, you get Simone Canyon and then an area known as Durangler's Corner, and the last run of the special trout water is known, of course, as Last Chance. And that area in the bottom part is a lot of riffle drops, broad riffly areas, which has some new stream improvements in it that the Fish and Game Department has put in the last few years.
Yeah, we had a question about that. Brian Tracy in Santa Fe wanted to know about the new habitat improvement efforts in the Cottonwood Campground area and how that's
changed. Yeah, they've been very successful so far. They're maybe not the prettiest things to look at, you know, aesthetically, but they've actually helped.
What did they do?
Well, they added a lot of big boulders down there. That area was kind of featureless. It was
big flat with a run, right?
Yeah, it was
like
just
a big flat area.
Well, there was like there's just some big broad riffly areas that were fairly shallow,
mm-hmm.
and really, the main thinking behind it was the Simone Canyon, which is on the north side of the river, just above that area that we're talking about where the stream improvements are, is kind of a big silt problem for the river. And they needed something in there to kind of narrow up that channel and to keep that sediment flowing through there better. Because those areas would really get loaded with sand and silt after a big flash flooding event. So, the rocks that they put in here actually have worked very well to keep the silt moving out of that area, not to mention kind of develop a lot of good holding spots for the trout, and the trout have taken to them very well and love it. And the fishing in that section of the river has improved in the last year or two.
By the way, we have Don from Colorado Springs wrote in that if you use Navajo Dam in Google Maps, that it goes right to the top of Texas Hole. So those of you on your computer that
want
to open up another window, you'll can look right in on what we're talking about here. Thanks for that, Don. Appreciate that. When we're talking about these different areas, I remember my first trip down there to Texas Hole, and we engaged a guide, and as he was putting the boat in at Texas Hole, I thought I'd throw a couple casts while he was fooling around with the boat, and I pulled out a 20-inch rainbow right there. Unlike my second or third cast on the river. So at that point, I was pretty well hooked on the, yeah. the San Juan. But,
that could be a lot of people's experience on our river, that's for sure.
Well, and in Texas Hole, like you say, you get out there and you look down, it's like this big aquarium, you know, of where you can see fish down 10 feet down, and it's a pretty amazing place, pretty amazing.
Well, I'll tell you, in the last 2 years, after the springtime releases, it's been the clearest I've ever seen the water in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean so clear that you literally could see every fish in the river. there was no place for them to hide. And it's been pretty amazing.
One thing, I don't know if this is just my feeling on things or what, but I and my son and his buddy went down once, and we noticed that all the guides were putting in at Texas Hole at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So we figured we'd get smart and go down there at 7 before the rush, right?
Right.
So we fished that hour between 7 and 8, and we didn't do any good at all. And then it seemed like as soon as the guides arrived at 8, the fish started putting the bite on. Now, is there any real reason or logic to that?
Well, a little bit to do with the fact that, you know, those midge hatches, they like the sunshine. They like the warmness. And you maybe, if you were fishing nymphs at that time of day, there might not have been that much activity going on for the nymphs, and the fish were being a little sluggish. What you probably should have done is maybe tried a streamer or something big and yummy like that, especially if you get out there, you know, just before the sun gets over the hills, you know, before it gets over the cliffs.
Right, right.
You know, that works pretty darn good out there.
Well, good. I'll have to remember that next time. Well, we do have a question from Joe Sloboda in Lorain, Ohio. And he wants to know what kind of gear he needs to bring out there. You know, weight of rod, length, that kind of thing. What's your standard setup you recommend?
Well, I would say for most of the year, a 4 or a 5 weight rod is ideal, 8.5 to 9 foot, because you're doing a lot of nymph fishing, and being able to mend the line and control the line is so important on our river. Presentation is everything. So the longer rods really help you control your line, and we do a lot of slack line type fishing. We're casting 20 feet, not really stripping in a lot of our slack, keeping that slack in our setup and controlling that line and trying to get the best drag-free drift that we possibly can. And so those longer rods really help. And then he mentions about the leader and tippet setup. I typically recommend during the normal flows, a 7.5 foot leader, 7.5 foot 5X leader, and then I use 6X fluorocarbon tippet for the flies. And I'll use just the 6X fluorocarbon just for the tippet and both flies. I usually fish 2 nymphs when I'm fishing nymphs. I may not do that with dries. I'll fish a lot of single dries, but with nymphs, I like fishing 2 flies here.
Now, what floating line?
Floating line. You won't really have a call for a sinking line unless you want to do some of that, you know, early morning, late evening, or even night fishing here, you know, then you could go use a sinking line with some streamers and you'll have pretty good luck. But just for the nymph fishing and the dry fly fishing, floating line is perfect.
Okay. Jared in Holland, Michigan. What's your most successful big fish fly?
Well, that's hard to say. For a nymph, a fly I developed a few years back, just about the time we really got into our drought years, I noticed that there was a larger midge that was becoming really prevalent in some sections of the river. I had never seen it before, and I usually kind of keep an eye on those kind of things, and this one really threw me for a loop. I had never seen it before, and I tied a fly that I called the Big Mac. And the Big Mac has developed into several different patterns. And over the last close to 10 years, I've taken more big fish sight fishing with that fly than any other fly I've ever tied.
Can you describe that pattern?
Yeah, I tie it on a size 22 200R, which is a long shank hook. And people are going to laugh, oh, that's a big midge, huh? Ha, ha, ha. But you know, a long shank 22, that's almost like an 18, I guess. And that's pretty large for our midges. People, if you haven't been here before, some of our midges will go down to like a size 28 scud hook, which is like a size 32 dry fly hook. So, I mean, they can be really tiny, in other words. So when I can use something that big, that's kind of exciting. It's just basically a thread bodied with I'll use either a camel brown or a iron gray or a dark olive thread. And then I'll use this material called Stretch Magic, which you can buy at craft stores. It's for beaded jewelry. It's like a polymer cord that's really stretchy. And it makes a great segmented body for larvas and pupas. I'll basically rivet with that and then rib a different color of thread in between those ribs. And then put a small head at the front, usually of dubbing, like a black dubbing.
Mm-hmm. Is a stretch magic? Is that, you know, shiny or is that
well,
colored?
It's clear, but it has a great light reflection quality to it. And it's very sparkly without really adding anything special or sparkly. It just reflects light,
mm-hmm.
Especially once you stretch it down. And I get the smallest diameter they sell, which I think is 0.05 millimeters. It makes a great segment and looks exactly like how these insects look in the pupa stage.
I had a question from Frank in Lanceville, British Columbia. And he's asking about why are the sizes of the flies so small down there? Because everybody hears that boy, you go to the San Juan and you got a fish with, you know, 28 and so forth. Yeah, why is that?
It's probably mostly due to how cold our water is. It's 42 degrees year round. It doesn't ever warm up. If you notice other streams, they may get extremely cold in the wintertime, but they'll probably warm up into the 50s and 60s in the summertime. You know, we don't get that kind of warm-up, especially in that upper couple of miles. So the primary insect, and especially since we've got kind of a silty base to the river, you know, it's because of all the sediment that we have there, it's kind of a silty base to begin with. And it's, again, more like a spring creek. It's got weed beds and things like that, and that's just perfect habitat for midges. They just thrive in that. And the hatches are so hard to describe, but I mean, you can literally see them clumping up and forming big balls on the river and fish going over along the bank and eating just, you know, one bite eating 100 insects, you know, kind of thing. So,
I know up there by insects. the Cable Hole, between Cable Hole and Upper Flats up there, I've just seen clouds of midges there at nighttime. Just, it's incredible.
You can be standing in the river and you look at your legs and it looks like you have a second skin just crawling on you with all these little. They're small and you don't notice them too much until they start getting into your face and up under your glasses and stuff. And then you start looking and you go, holy cow, I got them all over me. Just billions.
So one of the major flies that you use up there are midge patterns, it sounds like. Now, what about other types of hatches on the river? And I know we were talking before the show about this a bit, so I've got some inside information, but used to be good caddis hatches down there that I used to experience, and there was some mayfly hatches, but are you still getting those?
Yeah, we still have, at certain times of the year, very good Betis mayfly hatches. And that's primarily been more to the spring and late spring, summer, and through the fall. The fall is probably the best time for that. We used to have tremendous caddis hatches and tremendous pale morning dun hatches, but since we've really gone through these drought years and right around the turn of the century, we've really lost a lot of those bugs. Now, I guess maybe we get a few more years like this where we can really clean up that river. Some of that stuff may come back. There's no telling. But for the time being, it's really kind of slowed down for those type of hatches. We still get some great terrestrial fishing. We can get probably the best single thing that happens during the summer is if you can happen to catch the flying ant fall. We have a giant black carpenter ant that falls into the water. It's about a size 12. It's an inch long black giant ant that happens with the first rain shower of the summer. And that creates the single best dry fly day of the year. You know, you're going to fish these giant black ants and the fish
sounds like
bonkers for it.
Like when the cicadas come out up there on the Green River.
Exactly.
You've got to get it right, huh?
Well, that's the ironic part. It only lasts for one day. Fortunately for us, the fish remember that fly for a couple of weeks after that. But
oh, okay.
And that, But for what, that one day, it's pretty spectacular.
Well, John, we need to take another break here, so bear with me. And when we come back, we'll be answering more of your questions about getting John to share his secrets on hooking up with some of the lunkers in the San Juan. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website, www.familyties.com. That's family and then T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with John Tavener about fly fishing the San Juan River. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage, fill out that Q&A text box, send in your question, we'll try to get it answered on the show. Well, John, before we jump back into the questions, because we've got more questions about flies here and so forth and techniques that we're going to get into, but I want to give you a little chance and tell the folks about your business. What do you do down there? What services do you offer personally on the San Juan?
Well, I own Sandstone Anglers, and we're a guide service on the San Juan River, and that's what we specialize in. We both wade and float trips. We also do offer a few package deals where we are based in Aztec, so we have a lodging, meal, and guide package that we offer in Aztec, which is about 20 minutes from the river. I'm also the only certified casting instructor on the river, so I also offer fly casting instruction.
Okay. And you want to give folks your website address and your phone number there in case they want to touch base with you?
Sure. My web address is www.sandstoneanglers.com. And our toll-free number is 888-339-9789.
Terrific.
Be glad to answer anybody's questions anytime.
Great, great. Well, there you go, folks. You got a resource to get those questions answered. Well, let's try to answer a few more tonight here. Let's see. We've got Mike Wolf in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Wants to talk about more of your favorite flies here. So what other flies would you recommend? And maybe we could kind of combine that along with Don Daly's question, which is, what do you carry in your fly box when you go down to the San Juan? How many different flies, you know, different sizes, that kind of thing?
Yeah, for the midges, you basically have three or four different color ranges that you'll see predominantly. You'll have a red, which is a pretty large larva that'll be anywhere from an 18 to a 22. You'll see orange and olive and cream larva, and those tend to be pretty small. Let's say either on a scud hook, 20 to 24s on the scud hook. And sometimes like a size 22 200R. So they're fairly small in that range. The pupas, the Big Mac pupa is probably the largest one I see, like again, which is about a size 20, like I said, on a size 22 200R hook. And I primarily tie on the scud hooks a size 22 to 26. And those can be darker in color, like a gray or a brown or a dark olive or a black. And you really have to kind of just put your nose down there on the water and take a look sometime just to see what's in there. I think a lot of people overlook the fact that it's so small, I don't think they see it, so they don't realize it. But if you can put your face down there as close to that water as you can, you'll see those little pupas and those little larvae right there. And you can scoop them up in your hand and take a look at them and see how big they are. You'll have a lot better idea of what to fish with.
Okay. So you've got midges. What else is in your box?
And then for betas, our betas tend to be a little bit smaller than they are in some places. So we're talking a size 20 to 22 dry fly hook in that size range. And I use either a dark gray body or a dark brown body as being the most common. And same with the dries. Like a Parachute Adams works pretty decent when they're rising to dries. And then some of the, I tie one with a polywing thorax style fly, and that works very well. some of the more realistic patterns, because you're going to be fishing a lot of flat water, a lot of slow moving water, even with the dry flies. So, you know, having a very realistic profile really helps. And then maybe a few egg patterns. That's another really common fly to fish here. You could literally catch fish 12 months a year on an egg fly here. There is spawning fish nearly every month of the year. I've seen them here. A San Juan worm, of course. I like it for periods of time like now when the water is up high. It kind of pushes a lot of worms into the river. Flash flooding when the water is just a little bit murky. The San Juan worm still works very well. A rabbit leech is a very popular fly here. Woolly buggers sometimes will catch fish too as well. Like I said, that early morning, late evening type thing for those guys. And that's just about it. I can't think of that you would need too many more besides that.
Now, Joe Sloboda in Lorain, Ohio, want to know about terrestrials, and I think you had mentioned that earlier. So, yeah, the ants, but what about hoppers, that kind of thing? You
can find some decent hopper fishing in the heat of the summer here, like in August and the first part of September. Sometimes they'll respond amazingly well to those things, and you get some explosive takes from that kind of thing. Fishing the lower San Juan River below the town of Navajo Dam, if you're lucky enough to have a boat or a guide to take you down there, that area has great caddis and stoneflies and pale morning duns and terrestrials and everything, especially that mid-June to mid-July time frame. That is a spectacular place to fish. Unbelievable.
That's a long float down there. We did that once.
It's about 8 miles. It's the perfect one-day float, and it's like your traditional float. It's a lot different than fishing the quality waters upriver where you're kind of fishing to the middle of the river. Up, you know, on that lower stuff, you're fishing a lot of banks and
right.
Overhanging trees and rocky structure along the bank, and it's neat. It's really neat. It's one of my favorite places to fish.
You had mentioned earlier that a lot of that, or most of that, is private water. You want to go over quickly with the folks about what the laws are on that?
It's very similar to what it is in Colorado and Wyoming. Basically, the landowners own the stream bottoms, so you can't get out of your boat and wade. You can't even legally drop your anchor in that section of river, or you would be considered trespassing. But you really don't have to. Like I said, it's an 8 mile float. It's a perfect 1 day float. So there's no reason to think about getting out and wading. You really have to kind of keep moving just to get through the section in a day.
Yeah. We ran into one spot down there where it was a little shallow. We had to get out to just get the boat through. Because, you know, in a drought year, the water could be down a bit.
Nobody's going to get upset with you to do that.
Down there.
It's not that big of an issue, but that's just what the laws of the state are.
Yeah, but definitely don't get out and start wading around down there.
No, definitely don't.
Okay, yeah. All right. Now, we had a question from Jared in Holland, Michigan again. He wanted to know what your thoughts on the bigger the bait, the bigger the fish theory, but it sounds like that theory might not hold true down there on the San Juan, does it?
Not really. Mainly just because there isn't bigger bait, you know, unless those fish are just holding out and hoping to find something like that. You'll, of course, catch nice fish, fishing streamers and stuff, but outside of a few occasions, you know, those fish they're really tuned into the insect population there because it's just so abundant and so numerous that even those big guys are eating those tiny little midges. One of the
amazing,
biggest fish I ever saw caught on this river was caught in that death row area by a person that was being guided by a friend of mine, Todd Kensia. We know him as Slim up here. But he had a client catch a 12.5-pound rainbow on one of those little size 24 midge pupas. it was an unbelievable fish, and it took him nearly an hour and a little more than an hour and a half to land that fish.
Wow.
A 12.5-pound fish on a size 24 in 6X tippet.
Oh, my gosh. Lucky you got that one in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have Jerry in Colorado. said he's coming down to the San Juan July 13th through the 17th. What other than the midge, which you're always going to have the midges all year round, but are there any other patterns he should be tying for patches during that period?
Yeah, you can definitely be prepared for some betas. There ought to be some betas mayflies in the afternoon. Midges are going to be going hog wild then, though, those little tiny guys especially. That's a great time to sight fish and fish those little tiny midges. If he has a boat, again, that lower San Juan, that would be a great float at that time of year. That's great for bigger drives. And
yeah.
Who knows, if you do explore that area from, let's say, Simone Canyon downstream, even through the bait fishing water onto the town of Navajo Dam, you'll find a few PMDs and a few caddis in there still. And that's the time of year to go look for that stuff.
Hey, we've got a couple questions that have come in here over the internet. Rodbrush Shears has a couple of questions here. He's down in Amarillo, Texas. He wants to know, will you ever be able to fish right behind the dam again? Are you experiencing the same security issues there as everywhere else in the world? Or?
Yes, since 9/11, they closed the upper 200 to 300 yards of river. Used to be able to fish right up to the release. There was a big flat there that's known as the University Flat. And that, boy, I'll tell you what, there's some giant fish in there. It does not appear that will ever be opened again to the public. That could change. I know people have approached the BOR about that, but again, with the security issues, it's highly unlikely that will be open again.
Okay. Rod also had another question. He said he heard that there were some hybrid steelhead put into the river. Is that true?
That is true. And I
got to say,
a steelhead
rainbow.
Rod's
got an inside scoop here, huh?
Yeah. Well, the steelhead rainbows actually were first planted in the river about 2003, and then again, I think, in 2005. And they are the primary rainbow on the river right now. Talk about a lot of fun to catch. Boy, they're a handful. They haven't had the growth rate that some of our other fish have had in the past. In other words, they haven't grown quite as fast. But they're just now getting to be that 18, 19-inch range and bigger. And, boy, do they jump and fight. They're a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Another question Rod had, so we'll give Rod a lot of airtime here tonight. What is your favorite area of the San Juan to fish? What part of the river?
Boy, you know, I got lots of great places I like to fish, and it kind of really depends on what time of year. I like to fish the upper mile of river in that early summer. Boy, I tell you what, that can be some of the greatest fishing of the year is in the catch and release area right below the dam and the cable hole and the upper flats. Boy, those midges come off, and there's usually a lot of fish in there right after those high spring releases, and it can be phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal.
I'll tell you, that was one of my favorite spots, too, is up there, like I said, when the midge hatches. In those kind of riffle areas out there and the midges come off, you don't realize how many fish are there until they start rising for those midges. I mean, there's
or just
literally
moving
thousands
up in the water column where you can just see them all of a sudden, and they're just all suspended and... Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. But then getting them on the hook is another thing, right?
Yeah.
Jared in Michigan again asks, he wants to know where you find or catch most of the big trout in the San Juan, not specific locations, but more, you know, general holding areas, what kind of water you find them in.
Well, the bigger fish will surprise you. That's what I can tell you for a fact. Most people will walk right by them. Most of the really big fish that I not only have I caught or hooked, but have seen, have always been close to what I'd call the edge, close to where the drop-off is, close to where the weed bed is, and quite often pretty close to the bank. I remember one year, not too many years ago, I discovered this one giant fish that went to the same spot every day, and I was guiding every day, so I'd go over there and take a client over there and go look in this hole, and sure enough, there he'd be, 3 feet from the bank. 24-plus-inch rainbow that weighed 7 pounds, had a 15-and-a-half-inch girth. And I think we hooked that fish six times and landed him like 4 times. And he would go right back to the same spot, but he was right close to the bank, and I think people walked right by him and just never saw him.
So are you telling us anywhere?
I'm saying that one of the things that's kind of unique to our river is the fact that you can see the fish so well. And I think a lot of times that kind of intimidates people, where they see the fish and they go, oh man, that fish is right there. I bet I can't catch him. I'm going to go out into the water where I can't see the fish, into the deeper looking water. But in essence, really, a lot of those fish are very catchable. You just have to approach it a little bit different, and especially with midges. Getting the weight right and the depth right that you're fishing those flies at is a critical part of fishing the San Juan, and something that you have to work at quite a bit. A lot of changes in weight, a lot of changes in where your strike indicator is, so that you're changing the depth that you're fishing at. That makes all the difference in the world.
Well, and you do have a big variety of depths in that river. I mean, from calf deep riffles to 20-foot
deep. The deepest
pools,
spot in
right?
there is almost is over 20 feet deep.
Yeah. So there is a lot, big variety there. Well, we need to take a short break here, John. But when we come back, we'll talk more with John about fishing the San Juan. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic tapers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit our website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com for more information. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with John Tavernier about fly fishing the San Juan River. If you'd like to ask John a question, go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that Q&A text box there to send us your question. When we receive your question, we'll try to answer it on the show tonight. Well, we've got more questions here about tactics and so forth, so let's jump in there. Bob Carter in Michigan wants to know, and you did briefly mention this, whether you use a one-fly or two-fly or three-fly rig. How do you usually rig up? Are you using a attractor pattern, or are you using two nymphs, or how do you? What's your normal configuration there, John?
A lot of that's a little bit dependent on the time of year. Now, at this time of year, for instance, and especially with the higher water, and a lot of spawning going on, so an egg pattern, and then attach a red midge larva off the end of it. And right there is just about all you need. At other times of the year, like when we were talking about fishing the upper part when all the midges are coming off, then I'm probably not fishing anything but a couple of midge pupas. And believe it or not, most of the guides are actually probably fishing two size 24 pupas at the same time.
What about three fly rigs? Do you want to do anything with that?
No, it's perfectly legal to do here. I don't recommend it because you're putting more chances of foul hooking into the equation, and especially with the fine tippet and the fluorocarbon tippet, you know. You can fish three flies, but I wouldn't recommend it at all. Two flies is plenty.
You get enough tangles with two flies, right?
Yeah, that's the way I look at it, for sure.
This had to come up at some point in time. Bob Barnes in New York. When fishing the San Juan and you kick up those big trout under your feet, the San Juan shuffle, as it's known, what is the best thing to do to get out and cast and try to catch those fish? So you want to explain the San Juan shuffle to those people that don't know about that?
If you haven't been here before, it is kind of a unique thing.
Yeah, it is.
Just the fact, the sheer fact, that the number of fish and the number of fishermen. These fish have learned to basically follow fishermen around because they realize that, one, the fisherman kicks up food, and two, he breaks up the current and makes it easier for them to hold in a spot. Fortunately, I don't see it as prevalent as it used to be. In other words, I think the fish in some areas have kind of gotten away from it, won't do it as much. there are some areas that I think just get enough traffic that they still are kind of used to it and still respond to it. The best thing I can tell you to do is to stay back as far as you can from the holding water that you think the fish is in and try to fish into those spots and really work it from the outside, you know, and take your time working that water so that you don't risk them seeing you and leaving their hold and come over and follow you.
And basically that's illegal to shuffle and try to fish to those fish, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Like chumming or something?
A regulation, yeah. It's the regulation states it's illegal to dislodge the bottom in order to attract fish. Now, if you've gotten into a spot that those fish have just gone to your feet, what I would say is just leave. Just get out of there for a while. Go somewhere else for a little bit. Let those fish go back to their normal routine and just approach it a little more cautiously later.
Yeah.
You know, come back a little bit later. And you know the fish are in there. You just got to stay back far enough that they don't know that you're there.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun sometimes just to stand there and take a few minutes out of fishing and just watch them feed below you, too. It's kind of
well, you can learn a lot about their feeding habits. And I got to tell you, I catch a lot of my fish, even though I'm fishing with a strike indicator, I pay little or no attention to my strike indicator. Once you understand about where your fly is in relationship to your strike indicator, you can actually start watching the fish. And you can see the fish that'll move in line with your fly. You can even sometimes watch him open and close his mouth, or you might see him have a reaction like he bit something that he didn't want to eat. And then you can set the hook. Instead of watching your strike indicator all the time, that's what I've learned to do out there, is I don't pay nearly as much attention to my strike indicator when I can see the fish, especially to the fish themselves.
And what are you looking for at when you see the fish? Are you looking for the mouth?
What you're going to see them do in most times is they'll make a lateral sideways move to intercept your fly. You're not going to be drift, you know, unless you just happen to catch their lane perfect. You're going to be somewhere off to the side of that fish somewhat. And you'll see them make a move. And once you kind of figure out that your fly kind of hangs at a 45-degree angle behind your strike indicator, and once you realize kind of the distance you have from the very end fly to your strike indicator, you'll have a good general proximity to where your fly is in relationship to everything out there. You'll see a fish move in and do a feeding move in where you think your fly is. Instead of watching your indicator, react to that. Set your hook when you see that.
Okay.
And it's amazing. I've showed that to so many clients over the last few years, and it just blows them away when they actually see it happening. And it's a great way to fish that river.
We've got two questions here. I'm going to kind of combine one that came in on the internet that is from Bob Todd in Frazeesburg, Ohio. The San Juan and Drifting River, are there parts that you can wade? We kind of talked about that. There's a little bit of both. But then we've got a question from Susan in Minnesota. She said her husband would love to come back to the San Juan and catch the big one. A couple of years ago, he developed an imbalance inner ear problem, which makes it difficult for him to wade streams and rivers. Any suggestions on how he might accomplish his dream catch? So you want to address just briefly, because we did kind of discuss this, but the wade versus float option.
Well,
that you have.
I think the San Juan overall is a very easy river to wade, outside, of course, of some of the higher flows that we can have.
And the greased bowling balls, right?
Yeah. Well,
that's one thing,
you know,
I remember.
I would recommend, you know, some spikes or something like that on your shoes. They sure do help. It can be a little slippery, but for the most part, it's not big rocks, and it doesn't trip up a lot of people. For the most part, it's pretty easy wading river. There's a lot of places you can cross the river. Let's put it that way. So it's a broad river, but it's, for the most part, pretty easy to wade. But it's also an easy river to float. And for Susan, that may be something I would suggest for her and her husband, maybe to do a float trip. Just, because of the situation her husband's in. That would be a safe thing for him to do. Although, man, there, you know, the area just above the Texas hole, you can go right along the bank there, right from the parking lot, and be on top of a lot of fish and really not have to get out too far into the water. It may be a kind of a crowded place to fish because it is so close to the parking lot, but then again, it's certainly not a stressful place to wade and pretty easy to get around in.
That brings up another question. We had Paul Downey in Milliken, Colorado. He says, what secrets can you offer for the tailwaters when it becomes overpressured, when you do have a lot of people fishing? Is there anything that you do differently?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of river to go explore then that people forget about. The area below the special trout water, for instance, can be great, great fun to go fish. Now, granted, it doesn't have as many of the trophy fish as the upper part, but the Fish and Game Department keep it well stocked, and there are still a lot of holdover fish in those areas. I've caught many fish over 20 inches down there, so it's not unusual to catch those kind of fish. And there will hardly be anybody down there. You know, there's some really nice places you can find to fish down there. Even in the special trout water, the area from Simone Canyon on downstream doesn't get that much fishing pressure. You can typically find some good water to fish in there.
Right, right. I found, too, when we were down there in the summertime, you know, the heat of the day and that mid-afternoon would get kind of unbearable at times. So, you know, we get up early, fish till about 2 or 3, get off the river, go have an early dinner and kind of take a nap, and then we'd go out until dark. And we'd have some great times, and there weren't that many people in that upper area by Cable Hole, you know, as it got later into the evening. So, yeah, I think there's enough water there that you can always find a place where there aren't people.
Well, I certainly, when I'm out guiding, that's kind of how I plan my day a lot around, is just where the people are and where the people aren't, more than anything.
Right.
Even though I may know a certain area is really good fishing, if it looks like it's pretty crowded, I'll say, well, let's just go try somewhere else. There's so many fish in the river that you can easily go find some places where it's not too crowded.
Okay, we still have some more questions. We'll have to move along here so we can try to finish these up, John. One is, it's kind of an interesting question. The fish on the San Juan are notorious for being selective, especially when it comes to depth of water. And you just mentioned this a few minutes ago. How do you determine if they are feeding on the bottom, in mid-current, subsurface, or on those special occasions on the surface? That's a good question.
Yeah, it is. And for me, the way I dictate all that is simply by looking. Because that's one of the great advantages of having such a clear river, is you can get a good idea of the fish just by seeing them. You can, a lot of times, you can look at where you're standing and look at where the fish are and go, okay, well, that looks like it's, let's say, 2.5 to 3 feet deep right there, and the fish are like a foot off the bottom. So let's say that it's 2.5 feet, and that's the distance I'll put my strike indicator away from my weight. And then from my weight, I have about 18 inches to my first fly, and then I have about another 12 to 18 inches to my second fly. So once you put it all together, you've got 2.5 feet from there, and then probably, let's say, another 2.5 feet of leader there, so you've got 5 feet total. So when that floats through the water, it's going to be at a 45-degree angle back, and it'll be approximately 2.5 feet deep. It'll be just about right at the level that you're thinking about. And that's kind of how I gauge that. So if I'm looking at a group of fish and I say 3 feet, that's where I'm going to place my indicator versus my weight.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Okay, another question from Brian Charles Wagner, Aztec, New Mexico. I don't know if you know Brian or not, but he says,
I don't.
Okay, he says, any hints on getting the hang of midging from a nymphing impaired local?
Well, he lives right there. Well, and that's just it. I think another thing that kind of blows people away for me, I can find a lot of water on the river that's reasonably shallow, and those fish will be very actively midging or nymphing, or eating nymphs, midges, and even sometimes betas, depending on the situation. Getting the hang of midging is just figuring out, again, that depth that those fish are feeding at. And for me, once I see them suspended off the bottom, I can basically take the larva stage of the midge out of the equation. When those fish are suspended, they are eating pupas. And you can simply use a stomach pump to tell that for sure. When you'll extract the stuff from their stomach, and it'll be strictly pupas. If they're down closer to the bottom, then you're going to see a variety of larvas and pupas, and then you may have to fish like a larva and a pupa. But if they're up in the middle of the water column, you got to go with just the pupas. And even if they're what you would think rising on the surface, you have to be very careful when you watch the rise forms. If you're not actually physically seeing their heads come out of the water to eat a dry fly, those fish are eating midges in the surface film. So you can take the same midges that you were just fishing right along the bottom and take the weight off and dress up your leader and fish it right in the surface film and catch those fish. You really have to pay attention to what you're seeing. You know, when you're watching rise forms, you know, are you seeing their head come up or are you seeing their back come out? If you're seeing their back come out, stick with the nymphs. Just dress up your leader, take the weight off, and, you know, put the strike up indicator up there close enough that you, again, you can kind of figure out where your nymphs are, because you're not going to be able to see them, but you can get a good idea of where they are.
Well, I learned that lesson there one night, you know, as it was getting dark and trying to figure that out. And I ended up, you know, using a midge cluster dry as a, like my indicator, and then just dropping that
little pupa off the
pupa off the, yeah. Yeah, and then that was the combination that allowed me to see, number one, because it was getting dark and everything so small anyway, but I was able to see that. But it took me a while to figure out what that rise form was for a while, and that is a big difference. You can wear yourself out when you're not doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can think, they're rising, I got to put a dry fly on, but they're not really rising.
Right, exactly.
You got to figure it, yeah.
I just want to, we're running out of time here, and we're still getting questions in on the Internet. I just want to recognize Joe, because he's in Brisbane, Australia. I have no idea what time it is there right now. He says he's coming to the San Juan on April 4th and 5th, so that's a long ways to come to fish the San Juan.
Not unusual. I've had people from all over the world here.
Yeah. It's a well-respected fishery and a great place to fish. I know from personal experience, I've had some great times down there. We've got a few other things I'd like to go through quickly. One is just because there were several questions. John Reich, Bart Lombardo, New Jersey, and Ralph in Texas all wanted to know about, you know, the state of the river and how it's changed. I know you had mentioned earlier that, you know, there were some drought years, and people are concerned that maybe the river suffered or what. Could you kind of just address that quickly?
Yeah, you know, I think the river, I think it's still worthy of its reputation. It's still an incredible river. And I know Ralph mentions here in his question that he had caught some very, very large fish in the past. And I'll say, Ralph, that the fishing is still very, very good. He mentioned that he caught 225-inchers in one day there. Now, that's pretty dang impressive. Now, that you might not do again here right now, but these fish are really these new steelhead rainbow hybrids are getting bigger every year. And the thing that I notice now is that we're getting a lot more reproduction, not only from the brown trout, but from these steelhead rainbow hybrids. We're actually getting some reproduction happening in our river, which we've never had before. So we're kind of, it, you know, I wouldn't say we're declining, I would say we're evolving. And I think the river is still a very, very special place. I don't think either one of those gentlemen would be disappointed about fishing here anymore.
Okay, good. And then some trip planning questions here. If a person is coming from out of town, what's the nearest place you can fly into?
Most of the folks will fly into Albuquerque, and it's about a 3-hour drive from Albuquerque. If you want to catch a commuter flight and get a little bit closer, you can fly to either Farmington, New Mexico, or Durango, Colorado. But nowadays, I mean, those commuter flights are fairly expensive, and it's almost cheaper to rent a car in Albuquerque. It's a quick drive up. They've got a nice highway from Albuquerque up here. 2.5-3 hours from the airport, you're up here.
And what about, I know you said you offer some package deals for lodging, and what are the other options for people there?
Well, there's many lodging options on the river, everything from full-service lodges with meals and all the amenities to small, quaint little bed and breakfasts to simple motels where you can basically just get a bed and a shower. So it really depends on the budget.
Also a campground, too, right?
Oh, lots of camp. Actually, the whole area is within a state park. And so there's two state park campgrounds, one on the reservoir and one on the river. And then there's all sorts of RV hookups out here. There's several different RV places out here, too.
Okay. A couple other questions were about things for people to do that are not fishing. Are there some things to do around there?
You better believe it. If you like to play golf, we have one of the best municipal golf courses in the United States in Pinyon Hills in Farmington. In fact, I offer a golf fish package for anybody who likes to do that kind of stuff.
What more could you want, huh?
Yeah. Then the golf course is a spectacular golf course for anybody. This area is very, very rich in Indian history, and you're very close to many different reservations. The Anasazi Indians were in this area, and there's many different ruins and things to explore. From the river, you're an hour drive from Durango, Colorado, which is a great place to visit with all the restaurants and shops, the railroad and everything that there is to do up there. There's a lot of things to do.
Great. Let's wind things up here, John. We've run out of time, so I'll have to kind of close things up here. But when we return, we're going to be giving away a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine and Chad Scheel's Bass Streamer Pro Fly Box. So stay tuned to see if you win. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They also provide both walk weight and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas South Platte and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please leave a comment if you can. You'll find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, "What did you think of this show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our prizes are randomly drawn from our database, and you would have had to have registered in advance to be able to qualify for this. So if you didn't do it this time, make sure you do it on the next show so that you can take part in this drawing and win one of these great prizes. So the first thing we're going to give away and to our lucky winner is going to be the Fly Fusion Magazine subscription for 1 year. Great magazine out of Calgary, Canada. Wonderful photography, wonderful how-to articles, and their website is www.flyfusionmag.com. So let's see, John, let's see who our winner is for there. I'm going to press my magic button here and pull up a winner, and I've got Kristen Hannell in Iowa. Kristen Hannell in Iowa. Well, congratulations, Kristen. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the magazine like all the other subscribers seem to do. Wonderful gift. Congratulations. Now, our second winner here is going to be getting Chad Scheel's Bass Streamer Pro Fly Box. And that includes 4 Mad Mud Dog Salamanders, 4 Scheel Shiners, 2 Deep Swimming Frogs, 2 Sugar Daddy Craws, and 2 Producers. 14 flies in all. And they're great for largemouth bass and smallmouth bass, and I'm sure those crayfish would work for some nice big trout as well. So, and you can see Chad's flies at emergefishing.com. That's emergefishing.com. Well, here's the winner for Chad's fly box, and that would be Joseph. I'm going to destroy your name, Joseph. Ciavaglia, Jr. in Pennsylvania. So I know I destroyed your name. I apologize, but not too good at that. So congratulations, Joseph, on winning that fly box. And considering where you're at, I'm sure you'll put those flies to good use on some smallmouth in your area. Okay, now, the final gift we're going to give away tonight is a $20 gift certificate, compliments of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And whoever wins this can redeem their certificate either online on their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com, or if you happen to be in Boulder, you can redeem it in their store. So either way, no matter where you are, you'll be able to take advantage of this. So now, John, we're going to have to ask a question here, and then the first person that answers this correctly will win this $20 gift certificate. By the way, I'm noticing here that we've still got tons of questions that were unanswered coming in off the Internet. I noticed some of them we did answer on some other questions. Boy, did we get a lot of questions. John, you wouldn't believe all the ones I'm coming in.
I wish we had more time, Roger.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we're out
of time.
Maybe
another time.
Yeah, maybe we can do this again sometime. The first person that answers this question will win this. Be sure to put your name in and your location along with the answer. And I make these questions real easy because we want to make sure we get a winner right away.
Exactly.
So what is the primary food source that you'd find on the San Juan River? What is that food source? And now, John, I'm just clicking through trying to look for someone that has answered that correctly, and then they will win that $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers. Now, I made that real easy, folks, so I don't expect this to take very long at all. And and Jared of Holland, Michigan. Jared asked a lot of questions on tonight's show, so I think he got the right answer. He said midges. John, what do you think?
I think that'll do.
That'll do. Okay. So, Jared, congratulations. You put in a lot of effort on our show tonight. We appreciate that. We appreciate all the questions from everybody on the show tonight.
They always do. Great questions.
Yeah. So to finish up with Jared, send me the same way you just sent the answer. Send me your email address so that I can communicate with you, and then we'll take care of your gift certificate. Well, John, we really appreciate you being on the show tonight with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Roger. I really had a great time.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk about the San Juan. I personally have many good memories, both with my father and also with my son on that river. I always enjoyed it. So thanks for sharing your knowledge with us. And like we said, maybe we can do it again sometime.
That sounds great, Roger.
Well, our next broadcast will be on March 5th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we'll be interviewing Bo Beasley. And our topic for that show will be fly fishing for shad on the Rappahannock River in Virginia. And Bo has fished the waters of Virginia for over 30 years and finds the shad of the Rappahannock River as challenging a fish as any other. Listen to Bo share his tips and techniques for hooking up with one of Virginia's great sports fish. We want to thank ISE, the International Sportsman's Expositions, Fly Fusion Magazine, Flat River Fly Shop, Keeney's Fly Shop, and the Federation of Fly Fishers for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. And feel free to explore the other areas of our site, including our events calendar and directory. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.